To understand just how much grit and determination it takes to reach the pinnacle of sports, look no further than the story of Sam Piette. In this episode of Player to Player with Caldwell, I talk to the Montreal Impact and Canadian national team midfielder about the teenage transatlantic journey through three European leagues that finally brought him back to MLS as a hometown hero at his boyhood club. And I'm delighted to announce today that I have on my friend and Montreal Impact midfielder and Canadian national team player, Samuel Piette. How are you doing, Sammy?
I'm good, Steve-O. How are you?
I'm good, thanks, mate. It's kind of a weird time, isn't it? We were just chatting before we press record here on how strange it is for professional football players not being in groups and not being able to train properly as a unit. Just tell us a wee bit about that and how hard that's been for you.
Yeah, it's a really, really weird situation, you know, because there's a lot of question marks at the moment. It's pretty much a day-to-day situation of, you know, seeing what's happening with, obviously, the situation with the virus. But in our professional environment, you know, now, obviously, we're away from trainings altogether. So you got to stay fit. It's tough. It's not the same as when you train with your team. So, yeah, like you said, it's a weird situation, but we got to deal with it.
Yeah, I'm sure when we start getting into this conversation that the subjects of perseverance and dedication and mental fortitude will come up, and it's certainly needed at times like this, not just for professional football players, but for everybody out there. So we understand how hard it is. But I want to start this chat right at the beginning, mate. November 12th, 1994, Samuel Piette is born in Le Gardeur, Quebec.
Sure.
Give us an idea what it was like growing up in Le Gardeur. You know, I think it's a town of about 20,000 people. Give us an idea what that was like for you and for your family.
Yeah, it's a little town, you know, 20 minutes away from Montreal. Really quiet place. I live with my parents. I'm an only child, so no brother, no sisters. And yeah, it was a pretty quiet place to grow up. I had my two cousins. That are, you know, they have pretty much the same age as me, that live five houses from where I live. So these were kind of my brothers. And, you know, it was, like I said, really relaxed. Little town, like you said, 20, 25,000 people. So it was a good place. My parents still live there. So I go back a lot. I try to go as much as I can. But no, really, really, really cool place to grow up because it really is really, really quiet.
Yeah, and what was the sport of choice here? Was it, I'm assuming hockey, but was it hockey or was it a mix of different sports?
Well, you know what? I've never played hockey in a team, so my parents never put me in a team to play ice hockey. Obviously, hockey was the sport that we play in front of my house with my neighbors, my cousins. You know, and obviously, I was always the smallest guy. I'm still today. So they put me in goal. So I was the goaltender for when we were going out playing hockey. It was a really fun time, but no, I started playing football when I was four, and that's the only sport I've practiced, you know, my cousins as well. So it's a pretty strange because coming from Montreal, Quebec, and a small town like that, you would expect, for your kids to play hockey, but that's something I never did. I'm happy about that choice.
Yeah, and where did your soccer influence come from, Sam? Was it your dad and... I'm assuming, was your cousins your dad's brother or your mom's? What side of the family was that?
Yeah, so my cousins, these are my mom's. So our moms are sisters. And right. I basically started playing football because of them, because they're 1 or 2 years older than me. So when I was four, they were, you know, 5 and 6, and they were playing football. And, you know, they were kind of my idols. So I wanted to do the same as them, and I saw them playing football, so I wanted to play football as well. So that's pretty much how I got started in that sport.
So how quickly did the coaches recognize that young Sam Piette had a talent and had an ability playing football a little bit higher than most people?
Well, it's funny because when I was pretty young, or until the age of, I would say, 12, 13, so when you start getting into the provincial program, I wasn't really good. I was a very average player. I was okay, I guess, but nothing special. And so I was just playing for fun. I didn't even know that provincial team existed. I didn't even know about the national team as well. So yeah, I was just playing for fun and, you know, to occupy my weekends. And yeah, I would say about 12, 13 years old, I realized that I had a potential when the provincial team came up and national team a little bit later. So that's how I got, you know, started into the more business side of it and more seriousness of the sport.
So was there one mentor, Sam, that sort of pushed you forward or really believed in you, or was it just an accumulation of different people at the provincial level?
Well, obviously at the provincial level, I had my coach, the U14. It was Rudy Deliscat, who played for Montreal Impact, who played for the national team as well, who I think really saw potential in me, obviously to pick me to make the team at the level of U14. But around the age of 14, 15, you know, I was playing with my club side in Boisbriand, which is 30 minutes away from where I live. And my coach, who was a woman called Lynn Beauregard, she had good connection in France and FC Metz, where I played 2 years. And I think that's the person who really believed in me and saw the potential. You know, she's the one who sent me away over there, I mean, to make some trials, and finally got to play 2 years in there. So I think that's the real person who saw the real potential in me, I would say.
Yeah, so you went to Metz in France. What age were you then? Were you around, it says 2009, I'm reading here. Was that, you know, 14, 15? What age were you when you went there, and how difficult was that? I mean, I went to Newcastle when I was about 14 or 15 for 4 or 5 weeks on pre-season, and I cried every night. I was a soft little kid. I didn't like being away from my parents. Was it the same for you? I mean, I can't even imagine. I was 200 miles away, but you're thousands of miles away on a different continent. Give us a little bit into what that was like.
Yeah, it was around that age. I think around 13 or 14, I went there just for a month. Like I said, my coach at the time had good connection there. So she sent me and another player to just go there, 1 month to train before the season started to get fit, you know, and have a good rhythm for when the season would start here over there in Quebec. And then after a month, after the season ended, so I was maybe at that age 14 or 15, I would say, same as you. FC Metz called back and they said they wanted me to go there for a year. So me and the other kid, we went there for a full year. Obviously, it was a big shock for me. You know, a month, when the first time I went there was only for 4 weeks. So it was fun, you know, a fun time to be in a different country playing football. But when you go there for a full year, it's obviously scary. So yeah, I was crying as well. Like you did, being 1,000 miles from my parents, my friend, at the age of 14, your friends from school, it was a really difficult period for me.
And how hard a decision was that for your parents to let you go, Sam? Did they understand that your dream was to become a professional? And so, I mean, I'm a parent myself now, and we'll get to you in a minute, but you're going to be a parent yourself soon as well. And I just can't even imagine allowing my son to leave at 14. It must be the toughest decision as well for the parents.
Yeah, of course. I think it was really difficult for them, but they never really showed it to me. You know, I think they never wanted me to see that, you know, it was painful for them and difficult. And my parents are not the people that are really into football in terms of knowing, you know, what's going on and the business side of it and the potential that I had and all this. They only, you know, really believed in me and trust the people around me that were pretty much making the decision for me because I was so young. So it was difficult for me. But I think, you know, now that I'm back here in Montreal and having these conversations with my parents, I really understand how hard it was for them. And that's something I didn't really realize at that time.
Yeah, I can only imagine. Life in France then, how, you know, you spoke the language, of course, but how different was it to Quebec? And did you settle quickly? Did you find kind of homely spirit there, or was it tough in the beginning?
No, it was tough the 2 years I was there, to be honest with you, because Yes, I had another guy from Montreal with me over there. So that helped me a lot. But it was the first time where I was in an environment of, you know, competition. So, yes, you train and you play games, you practice with other guys. But, you know, the ultimate goal is to get a professional contract or, you know, to go from the U15 to the U17s. And it was really competitive over there. And that's where I realized that, okay, football is something very serious, and French people, you know, are taking this very serious, which we didn't really do back in Montreal. So, you know, I was living in a formation center with other players that were coming from far from Metz. You know, you have friends, but, you know, at the end of the day, they're all your teammates. And you never really get out of this circle of, you know, you go to train and then you come back, you see the same people, coaches are around, and it's very difficult. So yes, I spoke the language, but beside that, I think social life was really, really difficult for me over there.
Yeah, I don't think that really a lot of Canadian lads understand that competitive edge to youth soccer in Europe. And I think you've touched on a great point there, Sam. It's, you know, these guys are your teammates, aren't they? But it's super competitive and it's a high-pressure environment, isn't it? And, you know, there's moments where you're doubting yourself, but I think that almost shapes the person that you became. And so, even though that was a tough 2 years, do you think it had a large impact in the sort of the personality and the player that you are today?
100%. 100%. I became, I always say to everybody who asks me questions about my past and my time in Europe, you know, I became an adult pretty young because I had to do stuff that, you know, a person who's 15, 16 years old normally don't have to do. You just rely on your parents. So if I just take an example, when I went to Germany at the age of 16, 17, you know, I had to find an apartment, and, you know, I had to learn English, I had to learn German. So I think my time in Europe, and especially in France, because like I said, this is the hardest place I've been because I was so young, you know, this time over there shaped really my personality and the person who I became today. So yes, it was tough at the time, but I'm really grateful to have done what I did because, like you said, I think it really defined who I am today and who I become. Yes, as a football player, but first and foremost as a person.
Yeah, you left France, you left Metz in 2012, and you joined Fortuna Düsseldorf in Germany, as you mentioned a little bit there. How did that move come about, and was there no opportunity at Metz, or did you just feel like a change of location was needed at the time?
Yeah, well, at the time, you know, my last year in France, you know, the club didn't want to keep me because I think the club got relegated. And it was difficult for foreign players to stay. And I wanted to get out. Like I said, it was a tough 2 years and I wanted to experience something else. And it's funny because now that you're part of the national team, that story came up with something with the national team. When I got my first called up, I think it was in March and 2012, I went away to play a game in Cyprus. And then right after that, I was off to Dusseldorf. My agent at the time found me a trials with Fortuna Dusseldorf. So I went with the national team. And then from there, from Cyprus, I flew to Dusseldorf to you know, make my trials over there. But I was happy to get away, get out of France, to see something new. And I'm happy that I did that as well. So that's how, you know, the contact in Dusseldorf or my appearance in Dusseldorf happened.
So, young Sam Piette, he's left Quebec to go to Metz in France. He's had a tough 2 years. He, instead of coming back with his tail between his legs and, you know, trying to maybe find a club in North America, he's then moved to a different country in Germany in a different language and a whole different experience. I think, you know, I know you pretty well, mate, and I know what kind of attitude that you have, but I'm starting to see how this has formed. I mean, that must have took someone to go to a different country and to then put yourself out there again and try and forge a career in Germany this time.
Yeah, it wasn't easy as well. But it's funny because when I land in Germany, funny enough, I was training, you know, my trials was with the first team. And, you know, the first couple of days, I didn't even know there was the first team. And I remember they were first or second, you know, in the second division, the second Bundesliga. And I was training with them and I was doing really, really good. But I was 17 at the time. So the club wanted to sign me to play with the U19s, and I was training with the first team. So you can see how naive I was about football and, you know, professional football. And for me, you know, I was in France and I wasn't really ready to come back to Canada or North America, because I knew how hard it would be to go back to Montreal or whatever in North America. And then if that didn't work at a young age, try to go back to Europe. So I wanted to experience, you know, the full experience of Europe right away, see if things would work. And fortunate enough, things worked out well for me over there.
Yeah, what was the club like? What was Fortuna Düsseldorf like? A good club, and what was it like living in Düsseldorf in Germany? Were you a bit more settled there?
Yeah, I was a bit more settled. I had my own apartment over there. The city was great. You know, I was, you know, more mature, older as well. So I was able to get out of my place a little bit more. No, it was really cool. You know, the club was really professional. And you could see the fan base was really, really massive. Yes, football is big in France, but I really realized, sorry, that in Germany it's another level. You know, fans are crazy about it, and it was the first time when you get, even if you just play with the second team or the United team, you get some recognition. So it was really fun and good time there. And I had a good friend as well from Australia who, for him, it was his first experience. Ben Halloran. First experience in Germany or in Europe as well, so we kind of help each other, and I had a good time over there.
So you played some games with the two team, the reserve team, and obviously did pretty well there. And then you got your appearances in with the first team. Was that a big moment? You know, I can remember back to story I always tell when I played the first Premier League game. I was sitting on the bus on the way back, and I was just so happy that it was going to be a match of the day, the programme that everybody watched to see the highlights in the UK that night. And I just felt, I've done it. I've had that appearance. I've made it, kind of thing. Did you have the same kind of feeling that all Yes. The kind of hardship, all the toil was worth it?
Yeah, 100%. 100%. I remember, you know, after my first appearance, I think I just played 5 or 10 minutes. It was against Paderborn. But, you know, we won as well again against, you know, that day we won. And it was a really special moment because I was part of the national team for 2 or 3 years, you know, and everybody was, you know, seeing me as the upcoming thing for Canada or, you know, a good prospect. But yeah, I've been part of the program for a couple of years and I've never played a professional game. So just, you know, to play that first professional game and be able to say, look, I've played professional, I'm a professional player now. It was, you know, a lot of weight off my shoulders and something I was really, you know, proud to say to people, because, you know, that's something obviously you work really hard for your entire career.
Yeah, I sort of see some similarities between myself and you here, Sam, because I was the same. I got my first cap for Scotland in Poland. I think I was about 19, but I'm pretty certain if I'd played for Newcastle, it was maybe one game, but I hadn't even played for Newcastle, which was my team. I'd maybe had a spell on loan. And I was in Poland with the 21s, and Craig Brown pulled me in. And I thought, oh, well, I'm joining the first team, but it's just an experience. And sort of the 55th, 60th minute, he puts me onto the field. And I'm like, I don't know if I belong here. You know, it's just like I'm playing with guys like 200 or 300 games under their belt. And I've never played for the club that I'm, you know, I'm signed to. So I can certainly empathise with that sort of feeling. I felt a little bit like a fraud. I wanted to kind of have that first team club experience so that I could feel like welcome in amongst the international guys. So I can certainly see how you felt there, and getting that first appearance just must have been, okay, now I can relax and push on from here.
Yeah, for sure. I remember my first cap, you know, like I said, it was in Cyprus. And, you know, Julian de Guzman was there, Atiba Hutchinson, Seaman Jackson, all the big guns, you know, from the national team. And like I said, I was part of that team. You know, every camp I was called in for 2 or 3 years, and I was making appearances with the national team, but I still, you know, didn't have one professional game. So, like you said, I felt like a kind of fraud a little bit, because I was like, I don't belong here. Like, I play with you guys, I train with you, but I'm not a professional footballer yet because I don't have that professional game or professional contract. So yeah, when that first game came in, you know, massive weight off the shoulders for sure.
Yeah, so you left Dusseldorf eventually. Why? What was the reason behind that? And again, another country in Spain with Deportivo La Coruña.
Yeah, I was supposed to stay in Germany, in Dusseldorf. But the club got relegated again. And there was a massive change in the offices. So yeah, I think the president left, the coaches left, and they got rid of, I think it was 12 or 13 players that year. So I wasn't really in the plans to stay with the first team. So I had to find something else. And, you know, my agent told me he had a contact in Spain, and Deportivo La Coruña was, you know, interested in me. At first, I went to another club called Racing de Ferrol. It was in third division.
Yeah.
To make a trials over there, and it worked out. But you know, Spain is a different country in terms of papers and visa. It was really tough to get it over there. And funny enough, it was during a friendly game against Deportivo La Coruña that, you know, Deportivo decided that they wanted to sign me. So I was playing for Ferrol, and then I ended up, you know, signing with Deportivo. So it was a good experience. You know, like I said, I didn't want to leave Germany because I was happy there, but I had to because it was really, you know, massive changes, like I said, in the office, and had to find something else.
Yeah, what a club to join, Deportivo La Coruña. You know, a massive club. I'm assuming that it was a crazy fan base, fervent fan base there. What was it like playing for these guys?
Yeah, it was massive, and especially because, you know, one of my good friend and next teammate, De Guzman, Julian De Guzman, played there.
Yeah.
And he was, you know, he did really well for 4 years there. So to have another Canadian, you know, joining the club, same position, you know, same, you know, style of play, people were really happy with my signature to the club. Obviously I was with the second team, but no, it was really great to play there. Fan base was good, but you know, lifestyle was really good. You know, Spain is one of my favorite places in the world. And I enjoyed, you know, living there 3 years. It was a really, really good time for me over there.
Did you find a big difference in the football between Germany and Spain? Was it, you know, an important part of your education as a player in terms of the pace of the game and the style of the play?
Yeah, 100%. Every place I've been, I've learned, you know, the culture of football and the type of football that the country wants to play. You know, in Spain, yes, it's typical. We always say they want to play possession and it's more relaxed, but it's true. Germany was more robotic, where sometimes you would have 2-3 trainings a day, where in Spain, I never had in my 3 years over there. So yeah, I could see the differences between the countries and the place I've played. And I think that, you know, formed the player I am today.
Yeah, so again, why do you think things never quite worked out there? It was another experience that was important in forming, I guess, the player that you are, but it never really worked out quite how you would hope. What were the reasons for that?
Yeah, I mean, like I think, like you said at the beginning of our conversation, you know, people don't realize how hard it is to make it in Europe, especially for you know, a player who's Canadian, who doesn't have a European passport. But yeah, after my 2 years in Deportivo, I couldn't break into the first team. You know, a lot of changes. You know, the team was playing in the top flight of Spain, so La Liga, which is for me the best league in the world.
Yeah.
So obviously it's really difficult to try to make it when you're 20, 21 years old. So I signed with, you know, a third division club over there, Segunda B, Club Deportivo Isara. And then after my first year over there, you know, Montreal Impact came in, and it's always tough to say no to your hometown club, but I think it's really, really difficult to make it in Europe. I'm happy of what I did over there. I learned a lot as a footballer, but as a person, I don't regret anything, but I'm happy to be back in Canada.
Yeah. Azara was an experience that was positive for you. I mean, was it a great place to live, and was it a good club to play football for?
Well, it's a bit funny because, you know, you go from being in the environment of Deportivo La Coruña, who's a first division club. So you know, facilities are great, you know, they're treating you very well. And then you go to a third division club where first in the third division, you have a lot of differences between the clubs. So you have clubs that are able to pay players 10,000 euros per month. And then you have clubs like Club Deportivo Isara was paying, you know, €500 per month per player. Yeah. And, you know, it wasn't the greatest city, but the people I've met over there are, you know, were really amazing. You know, I had teammates on my team that, you know, they had other jobs. So I had some that were teachers, stuff like that. So it was a really different environment from what I've experienced before. But really grateful, you know, I made very good friends over there. But obviously after a year, I want to get out of there to find, you know, a more professional environment for me and to, you know, continue to progress for me as a footballer.
Yeah, so I think this gets us to a really pivotal point in your career, the 2017 CONCACAF Gold Cup. And for me, this is looking for the outside. I called the games in that Gold Cup for TSN, the Canadian games, and the final and stuff. And so I thought it was the first tournament where you really became that sort of household name in your own country of Canada. Give us a little bit on the build-up to that, what you were thinking. Did you recognise that this was a big opportunity, or were you just going into it trying to play meaningful minutes and do well for your country?
Yeah, like you said, I think the Gold Cup in 2017 was a massive, you know, turnaround for me, a bit of pivotal point, like you said. But even before that, I remember we had a game in Montreal with the national team against Curaçao. And it was the first time I was able to play, you know, professionally in Montreal in front of my friends and family. And I had, you know, 500 people coming over just for me. So I first, you know, I think people realized that, okay, he's a professional footballer and we will follow whatever he's doing. And right after that, we had the Gold Cup where we had a good run with Octavio. And Octavio had a lot of confidence in myself. The players I had as well around me, I was playing with Pat Bernier in the middle and Scott Arfield, who are amazing players, obviously really helped me to play my football. And, you know, that addition, that team, you know, was really confident and a lot of liberty to play freedom. So I think that's why we had a good run. And I just made my job, you know, breaking plays, playing simple. And like I said, like you have players in front of you like Jonathan Osorio, Scott Arfield, Pat Bernier, your job is really easy. So I think this is where people really realize my potential. And obviously I got in under the radar of Montreal Impact.
Yeah. And did you know early that Octavio really liked you and trusted you as a player? And what kind of confidence did that give you heading into the tournament?
No, I had no idea because, like I said, his first game for him as a manager was the one in Montreal. I remember he came up in Scotland when we played Scotland over there for friendly, but he was just, you know, in the stands watching us. Michael Finlay was the interim coach at that time. So the Gold Cup was the first tournament for him and for me under him. So I guess just doing well in trainings, you know, behaving well, you know, having good behaviors outside of the pitch as well helped. And obviously I try to, you know, be the best as possible every time I get on the pitch, every trainings. And I guess he saw that. So I think he put a lot of confidence in myself and, you know, gave me freedom to play in that tournament, which I did. And obviously the fact that we had success and reached the quarterfinal first time for a long time, helped people, you know, following the national team and, you know, looking at us on TV when we played that tournament.
And what do you remember about that tournament, Sam? What was the big standout moments for you?
Well, for obviously when we tied Costa Rica in Houston, you know, everybody thought that we would lose that game. You know, hot conditions against a good team, and then, you know, going into the game winning 1-0 goal from Alfonso. I think, you know, it surprised a lot of people. And then, you know, drawing again Honduras from, obviously, we all know bad experience, you know, from when we played them a couple years ago, then drawing them and then getting us to the quarterfinal. I think that's something that people, you know, didn't put a lot of money on for us to reach the quarterfinals. So I don't know. I just felt like we were all free to play. And I remember that team was really good as well. You know, we had guys, obviously it was the first tournament for Alfonso Davis where he basically showed his talent and potential to the entire world. And this is where he exploded. So it was a really good tournament. I remember atmosphere was really good and everyone was happy to reach, like I said, the quarterfinals.
Yeah, and I think about that quarterfinal against Jamaica and I actually thought you guys were really unlucky. I thought you played pretty well and maybe deserved more for that game. Did you feel the disappointment? Did you think you guys had done enough to maybe just sneak into the semi?
Yeah, 100%. I think we played well that game. Obviously, we lacked a little bit in the final turn, third, and we conceded two goals that we should have avoided, especially one pretty early in the first half. But no, I think, you know, we had the possession and we got into the quarterfinals against Jamaica where we just tied Honduras, we just tied Costa Rica. We were confident of going through. So, you know, it was a big disappointment for us not reaching the semifinal because we believe that we had the team and the talent to do so, same as this year in 2019 in the Gold Cup.
Yeah, so the Gold Cup's over. I think you're still at Zara, but was there speculation? I can remember a lot of talk about you coming back to the Impact. Was that before the Gold Cup, or did it just kind of arise after your performances with Canada at the 2017 Gold Cup?
No, it was during and after that Gold Cup. I remember, you know, my agent told me that Montreal Impact reached out. I think it was after the Costa Rica game or even maybe just before the quarterfinal. So during that Gold Cup, I knew there was some interest from Montreal. I didn't know how big the interest was. And I had one more year on my contract with Izada. So I know it was a tricky situation. But after when that tournament was over, I really sat down and with my family and friends. And when the Montreal, you know, Impact came with an offer, then I really had to consider it. And, you know, when, like I said, your home team is coming, your hometown club is coming with an offer, it's tough to say no.
Yeah, and was Zara, obviously they were looking to keep you there, I'm assuming, but how difficult was that to kind of get you out of that contract? And was it down to your agent doing a lot of work, or was it the Impact's basically their need for you that made that happen? Can you remember?
Yeah, if I remember, I think that the club had to pay a certain fee to Izada to get me out of my contract. So obviously, like I said, Izada, who is not a big club, was happy to get some money from a team from MLS, obviously. But I had a good relationship as well with the president over there in Izada. He knew, you know, it was a good opportunity for me to play at that level and to go back home. So, no, it wasn't too difficult, I think, for me to go to Montreal.
So you're home, you're happy, you're back in Quebec, you're with your boyhood team, you're with the Impact. Excitement, I assume, maybe a little bit of pressure, I guess, on you to kind of hit the ground running. And for me, you certainly did. You hit the ground running. You were immediately in the first team, in the 11, and showing your worth and showing that you were going to be pretty much a mainstay for this franchise for the years to come. Did it feel good at the start, and were you confident, or did it take some time to settle?
No, it didn't really take time at all.
Yeah.
I remember first game, you know, after I signed, it was against Orlando at home, and, you know, I didn't have all of my papers to be able to play, so I was in the stand. And that's the first time where I watched, you know, I wasn't Stats Saputo watching a game, but as a member of the Montreal Impact team.
Yeah.
And then my first game, you know, it was the next game. We played Philadelphia Union, and we just came back from a win against Orlando at home, and then we win this game 3-0. You know, for me, for Mauro Biello, the coach at the time, to put me right away in a starting 11 was obviously, you know, a big surprise, but I was happy because, you know, he put me right in and I didn't have much time to think about what I I need to be to do. Sorry. So no, for me it was really perfect, and then I just, you know, continue playing and games and games and games, and it was a big surprise to play that much my first year, but I was happy because it was the best way for me to show what I was capable of and show that I'm an important piece for the club, and they made the right decision to sign me.
Yeah, I think that as that season went on, your performances got better and better, and you could see how important you were starting to become for the team. And then for me, at such a young age, your leadership role started to grow and become quite significant. Did you feel that? And is that something that you take to naturally, that sort of leadership position?
Yeah, that's something I take really natural. It's something really natural for me. I think, you know, the confidence came with just playing a lot of games. You know, my first year I came and there was only 11 games left. I played the 11. And then the second season of Montreal, I played the full 34 games with them. So obviously you get confident with the group, with the staff. And then when leadership is something natural for me, you just, you know, take pleasure in doing it and sharing it with people. And being a guy from home as well, from Montreal, gives you, you know, an extra responsibility as well. So that's a role, you know, I really embraced it. And I still embraced as steady to being a, you know, co-captain of the team right now.
Yeah, and I think that you talk about the staff there, Sam, but, you know, I think you're on your third manager at the Impact, which is not easy as well, if I'm not mistaken. You're Mauro Biello, you obviously had Remy Gard, and now on to Thierry Henry. So, again, a bit of disruption, even though you're in your home province, you've got that disruption. But it's some of that I think you take when we go through this story. You've had disruption at a lot of parts of your career, but it's the way that you move forward and your maturity through it all. Was it tough seeing Mauro leave? I'm pretty sure I know how close you guys are, and when he first left, was there a bit of anxiety there about what might happen with a new coach coming in?
Yeah, obviously I was disappointed for Mauro, you know, because I know how important the Impact, you know, was for him, and I obviously appreciated him as a coach for Montreal. I still appreciated him for the national team. And, you know, I wanted to keep working with him because he's the one that gave me my chance with the club. But every time, you know, you get a new manager, like you said, you always, you know, get a little bit nervous. And it's a lot of question marks. You don't know what to expect, especially during the off season. You have to prove yourself again. And, you know, 1 year with a certain coach, you might be a captain and then the leader and then the main guy. And then a new coach comes in and then you're stuck to the bench. So it's always a tricky situation. I'm sure you're aware of that. But, you know, that's something that you have to deal with and keep going because, you know, I've had, you know, changes of coaches and I'll still have some, you know, wherever I play. I'll have to meet new coaches and to prove myself every time.
Yeah, I don't think people appreciate what that's like for us, eh? And it doesn't really matter whether maybe if you're the guy on the outside who's, you know, substitute, maybe not getting as many minutes, it's probably a positive experience of changing coach because you know that you've got some fresh eyes in you. But when you're one of the leaders, you don't automatically think that that's going to be the case with the new guy, and you're a little bit on tenterhooks, aren't you, and a little bit anxious. But for me, I always fall back on just the kind of the routine and the style that I had, the sort of leadership. You know, you think about the basics and what that means for everyone round about you. And I see that in you as well, mate. I see someone who just, you know, does his job and does it to the best of his ability. And I think that kind of level-headedness is what, you know, sets you apart from most other players. And I guess I'm asking you here, the disruption and the sort of volatility of soccer, does it affect you? And how do you then use your experience through your disruption in your career to then help other players cope with that and get through it?
I think you've mentioned it. I think the best you can do when there's disruption and changes in your career or in your club or whatever it is, you just got to stick to what you know and what you do best. If you try to reinvent yourself and try to, you know, impress the coach because he likes, or you know, he likes a certain player because of this and that, but you're not, then I think you're a fool, and then you're shooting yourself in the foot. So for me, it was just doing what I know, and then if the coach likes that, perfect. If not, then I mean, I cannot be a different player. You know, I'm a type of player who likes to break plays and play simple. And, you know, in one day or one week, I cannot change the type of player I am. So, no, I think it's just to work on what you do best. And like you said, I think it's what you do every day that will show to the coaches that you're an important piece for the club. Your leadership as well, your personality is super important as well. And I always go back to this when there's changes in my career.
Yeah. The 2019 Gold Cup with Canada ended up being quite a disappointing experience. But I think it's important to recognise, you know, what this tournament meant for the group of players that are predominantly in the national squads now. Give us some insight into what the build-up to that tournament was. I mean, we all know what happened against Haiti. I don't want to talk about that too much, but I want to talk about the development of that culture and that spirit and that way of playing that I've been fortunate enough to become a part of as an assistant coach with John Herdman in the last few camps. Tell us how that was kind of fortified during the 2019 Gold Cup.
Yeah, I think since you guys came aboard and with John and Mauro, yourself, there's a massive change of culture, you know, in that program. And I feel like now we feel that this team is a team, you know, and not just a program. And that's super important. Obviously, you know, coming from that 2017 Gold Cup where we made the quarterfinals, expectation was for us, you know, to go even further, so to reach the semifinal. But we believe in that group because we had so much talent. You know, you look at the players that we had and we still have today. I still believe that we have, you know, the player pool to win that tournament one day. So, no, it was super, super important, you know, for us. You know, that tournament obviously came off with a big disappointment against Haiti, but I think we learned a lot from that defeat. And then, yeah, we just built on that, you know. Next game after, we played the U.S. and then we go on and beat them at home. Something, again, that people didn't really expect it to happen. But, you know, the group of players that we have and the staff as well, really, you know, buying all together to make this team something really serious. And I think Canada is the best that I've seen in the years that I've been part of.
Yeah, I think that I don't think people quite realise that this group is still really young and there's still a lot of development to come. And I think something as well, we always hate setbacks as professionals. We want to win every single game, of course, but the setbacks almost have a better learning experience than the victories. And I mean, I you know, again, I wasn't involved against Haiti from a coaching point of view, but I called that game and I could see things happening on the field that maybe were looking for that one or two leaders just to kind of arrest the slide of that game. And so it's maybe a difficult question to answer, but what did you learn for that game and what would you have maybe tweaked? I'm not even thinking performance, but in leadership and sort of words or actions on the field that will prepare you better for something like that happening again next time, maybe.
Well, I think the first thing is, you know, you go into that game and at halftime you come back in the locker room with a 2-0 lead. You know, maybe in that locker, you know, in our minds, we were a bit too confident of, all right, job is done, you know, 2-0, we're through, and then let's think about what's coming next. But I think this is where you need your leaders, you know, on the pitch to make sure that, you know, to make realize that everybody that, you know, game is not over and this is professional football and we're playing a very good team, you know, in front of us. you know, that is very hungry and obviously wants to reach that semifinal. So game is not over yet, and the score, we got to put it back to 0-0. And I think that's something that we're doing now. You know, after that loss, you know, every time we go up 1-0, 2-0, 3-0, we're still hungry. We want more. We want to score more goals, and we basically want to crush teams. And that's something maybe we didn't have in our mindset, you know, before that game. So I think this is where your leaders, you know, got to put everybody back to earth and say, look, game is not over. And yeah, like you said, it was a massive, massive point for us, a big learning experience. And I think we did. And I think we're a better team after that loss for sure.
Yeah, so you've got 49 caps, if I'm not mistaken, for Canada. You're one away from magical 50. You're 25 years old. I know what age you are, mate, but I keep looking at your age. I can't believe it. I keep thinking I'm going to see 28 or 29. I feel like you've kind of packed in so much, and because I know you and how mature you are, it's baffling to me. But you've got so much of your career ahead of you. The type of style of play, your profile of play, I think you can play until your mid-30s at least. With the national team, let's stick to that. We'll get to the impact again in a minute. But, you know, what's out there for Samuel Piette with the national team, and what's out there for the group, in your opinion, in the next few years?
Well, I think right now, you know, we were chasing that sixth spot, you know, in the X. And for me, you know, it struck me, you know, because we have the talent and the players to be, you know, top two, top three in CONCACAF. But now, because the format changed, you know, we're out of the X, and we might have to take the long road to qualify for World Cup. But I know this team is able, you know, to play in a World Cup. But, you know, it is what it is, and we got to go through what's in front of us. So I think there's a lot left for me. Like you said, mid-30s, that's my minimum goal. I want to play as long as I can. And obviously, I will play with the national team as long as I can and as long as they want me. So a lot of things to achieve. Like I said, first thing is to qualify this team for a World Cup. You know, I want to keep putting my leadership into that team. You know, I'm 25 years old. So, yes, I have a lot of experience, but I'm still very good with young people because I'm still young. So I have a good relationship with everybody. I think we're just getting started with the national team, because once again, you look at the talent and the players that we have, and we've never had that before.
Yeah, when I look at the group and when I spend time with the group, what I see is a group of guys who they don't complain, they don't moan, they don't have anybody who's kind of bringing that negativity to any situation. And you can always look at soccer or life in two ways. You can look at it being a glass half full or a glass half empty. And I think that this group look at it as a glass half full. And I think a lot of that is down to John Herdman and his leadership and his head coaching role there and what he brings and the amount of work that he puts in. I mean, I see it firsthand. The work that this guy puts in is absolutely exceptional. Just explain to us your relationship with him and what you feel he's brought to your game personally and to the national team program.
Yeah, I have a really good relationship with John. The first thing he did, you know, for this program is to make it more serious and make it more feel like it's a team and not a program where people come in and come out and then we don't hear about them for a couple of years. So everybody is always involved. And we're involved, you know, behind the scenes. So we have, you know, chats, connects, you know, video calls with coaches, with other players, even when we're not in camp. And for me, that's something I never really done before. And that's something he put in places for this team. And like I said, it makes it more serious. And for me, you know, he's such, like you said, he's such a good leader, and obviously he's someone that you look up to and you want to be like, and you want to be like him as a leader, and bring that leadership into the team. And he's someone that really put his leadership into me and try to implement that into that team. And yeah, I think he's done more for me off the pitch and, you know, the mindset and all this than any coaches I've had before, because yes, there's football, but there's a whole, you know, there's a whole element behind that that obviously makes it easier on the pitch, and that's something we've been working on together.
So from one coach in John Herdman to your relatively new head coach at Montreal Impact and Thierry Henry, great start for you guys before the virus has obviously set us back, but Thierry's came in there, he's had a tough time, a little bit of management. He's an absolute legend of the game, one of the best players in the world, in my opinion, between late 90s and early to mid-2005, something like that. But as a coach, you had a tough time. What have you noticed from him so far, and have you enjoyed working with him? And again, I reiterate the good start for you guys. What can be achieved from the Impact in the season 2020 once we resume?
Yeah, I've enjoyed every minute, you know, since he joined the club. He's someone that, you know, is still very, very passionate, you know, to the game. And it's a bit funny because normally, or sometimes you can think that, you know, a next legend like him, he's just there to, yes, being a coach, and he's the coach because of his name and all this. But he's someone that, you know, wants to teach us a lot of things, and he's learning, you know, things with us as well, because he's new to the managing, you know, program. So no, he's been very good. Like I said, I learned a lot of things with him so far, as a team, but as individuals, he's really passionate, and he likes, I think, to be around us as well. So that's a good thing. You can see that, yes, he's a coach, but he misses the game. Sometimes he practices with us, you know, play with us, which is super nice, because to have a guy like Thierry Henry playing, you know, rondos with you in possession is always spectacular. So no, I think we can do good things. I think we have a really good team, not just this year, but in the past years. But we've just, you know, didn't put the elements together to have success. But I feel he's the guy that could do that for us this year.
Has he still got a bit of ability in the rondos? Could he still do a trick or two?
yeah, he still have that touch. That's for sure. He's,
you never lose
he's
it,
spectacular.
Eh?
No. He's you could see why he was a legend of the game.
Oh, he was some player, I tell you that. I played against him 4 or 5 times when he was at Arsenal. And he was just ridiculous. It was one game we played Arsenal Leeds at Highbury, and he scored 4. And the last one, our fullback Gary Kelly was tripping him up as he was going through on the goalkeeper. And as he was falling, he still managed to stab the ball, just get his foot under it and chip it over the goalkeeper's shoulder in the back of the net. Just the whole stadium was in awe. He's a brilliant player, and if he's going to be half as good a head coach, manager, then I'm pretty sure you guys have got a good one there. But so, Sam Piette's 30 years old. It's 2025. Obviously, dream scenario. But what's achievable? Where do you want to be? What would you like to have said that's happened to you in your career at that point?
Well, it's tough to project myself over there. Obviously, in 2025, you know, World Cup will be played. So obviously I wanna say that I played in the World Cup with Canada. Well, I don't know when, if it's gonna be 2022 or it's gonna be pushed. We'll see. But I wanna say that I played in the World Cup with that country, that's for sure. And on a personal, you know, note, I don't know if it's gonna be still with Montreal Impact, obviously, because now I'm there and I've been there for the past 3 years, and I just signed a new contract. I wanna become a Montreal Impact legend and then a hometown hero, if I can say that. A lot of football still to play, and I hope that at 30 years old I'll still have more football to play and to give to people that are watching me and supporting me.
Well, one thing I know for sure, mate, is that you're going to work as hard as anybody to achieve some of the goals. And it's a pleasure to work with you, with the national team, as you know, and I look forward to doing more of that. And I want to thank you for coming on this podcast. I've enjoyed your insight, and appreciate you spending some time and letting us get to know you a little bit better.
Yes, sir, Steve-O. Anytime. Always a pleasure talking to you.
Cheers, Sam.
Take care.